Okay, I'd like to explain today's shiur, which is the title of this sefer that I had the schus to publish. It's called Mourning Over Churban, and since we're in the 3 weeks and before Tisha B'Av, I'd like to discuss exactly what it means, what our responsibility is concerning mourning over Yerushalayim, mourning over the Beis HaMikdash, and actually, it's not only an obligation to do this during the 3 weeks and the 9 days and Tisha B'Av, but it's actually an obligation for every Jew to do it the entire year. We focus more during the 3 weeks. It's more intense. But the obligation is there a whole year round. We know that there are various minhagim, various customs, such as when you enter a Jewish home in front of you, you're supposed to have in the wall facing the door, there's supposed to be an amma by an amma, approximately 2 feet by 2 feet, that is unplastered, unpainted, even if you have a multi-million dollar home, but it's not complete, because we have a Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash lies in ruins. So therefore, we have to remind ourselves of the destruction. We put ashes on the head of a chassan under the chuppah, in the place where he puts his tefillin. In Yerushalayim, there, except for the Simchas Beis HaSheva, during Sukkot, there is no full band that plays even at weddings. So these are various customs, and there's more than I've just enumerated, to remind us, as it says, Im le'ales Yerushalayim al Rosh Simchasi, that we are supposed to put Yerushalayim at the top, even of our greatest moments of joy. Even at a wedding, we remember that Yerushalayim lies in ruins. And actually, we are fulfilling thereby a halacha that is cited right at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. In the third sif of the first chapter of Shulchan Aruch, it says the following statement, Roy l'chol Yerushalayim, it is proper for every God-fearing Jew, sheyehei meitzar v'doeg al churban beis hamikdash, that he should be distressed and that he should worry about the destruction of the beis hamikdash. And this is not a halach; it's not a law during the 3 weeks or the 9 days. This is speaking about throughout the entire year. So we see in this statement of Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch, it seems that there are two obligations. He uses two words, meitzar, distress, and doeg, to worry. And what I'd like to explain in this shiur, what exactly is the difference? They sound very similar, distress, worry. What is the difference between these two words? Because actually, it's not just two words, but it's two obligations. What are those two obligations? We have a famous chazal. The chazal, it's taken from a Gemara in Masechta Tainis, Daf Lamed Amud Beis. Chazal say, Kol hamis abel al Yerushalayim zocha v'ro b'simchasa. Whoever mourns over the destruction of Yerushalayim, that person merits to see the simcha, the joy of Yerushalayim. V'she'enoi misabel Yerushalayim. But a person who does not mourn over Yerushalayim, enoi roya b'simchasa. That person will not merit to see the joy of Yerushalayim. So you'll notice that Chazal use a word here called misabel, avel. And if that word sounds familiar, unfortunately, it is connected with when a person loses a close relative. The surviving relative is called an avel. And that same word that we use concerning someone who passes away, avel, is also used here by Chazal concerning the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. Kol ha-mis-abel al Yerushalayim, from the word avel. So the question is, why in fact did Chazal use this word? Why didn't they use a word bochet? Whoever cries over Yerushalayim will see the simcha. Kol ha-mitzta'er, whoever has anguish over Yerushalayim will see the simcha. Why did Chazal specifically take this word misabel? So the answer, the key to all of these questions, is something that I had the privilege to hear from Hagoyin Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Zatzal. He said a beautiful explanation. And in order to understand this explanation, we have to define two terms. One is avel, which we've already used, but there's another term. When someone loses a relative, there's a term called onen. What is an onen and what is an avel? So an onen is the status of the surviving relative until the kvura, the internment, takes place. That person is called an onen. And an onen is usher, certainly potter, you're not obligated to do mitzvahs, but in fact there's a disagreement. Are you just freed from doing mitzvahs, or are you prohibited from doing mitzvahs? The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer Mishneh Brura says that the outcome, the psak, is that an onen is usher to do mitzvahs, not just potter. When the internment takes place, when the kfura takes place, then the surviving relative is called an avel. And an avel is chayiv in mitzvahs. That's when the shiva begins, and the avel is mechuyiv to do mitzvahs. However, when the person is an onen, again, quoting the Shulchan Aruch, and actually it is a Mishnah in Masechet Brachos, it says as follows, Misha meisoy mutal lefanav, a person who's deceased lies in front of him. It doesn't mean it doesn't mean literally that the person is lying in front. It means that if the surviving relative has an obligation to make sure that the deceased relative is buried, that's what it means when the mace is in front of him. That person is potter. Mikriyishma, minatfila, minatfilin, umikol mitzvah samoris betorah. The person is not allowed to eat chazer at that time. The person is not allowed to put on shatnez. Those are losases. Losases, a person is always obligated. But all mitzvahs asay, all positive commandments, the onen is potter, and as we said before, not only potter, but osir, prohibited to do what? To do what it says in the Mishnah. Kriyishma, davening, putting on tefillin for a man, and all mitzvahs that are positive mitzvahs that are written in the Torah. And the question that Rabbi Soloveitchik wanted to understand was, I can understand that the person is potter, he's not obligated, he's in distress, he can't function today, he can't do mitzvahs. That I could understand. But why usher? Why is he usher? That means he can't daven, he can't say tillim, he can't bench, he can't make brachas, not allowed to. Why should that be? That the person comes to the Rav, to the rabbi of the synagogue, and the person says to the rabbi, Rabbi, today, when this tragedy happened to me, this is the day I want the most to daven Tashem. Let me daven. And the rabbi will paskin, no, you are not allowed to daven. Why? Why should this be? So the answer, Rabbi Soloveitchik beautifully said, is based on a Zohar. The Zohar tells us that every Jewish person has within them three components. And the three components are compared to a light. We all know that in a light, the hottest part of the flame is the blue part of the flame that's closest to the wick. On top of the blue part of the flame, there's yellow, orange, red, different shades of light. So the blue part is the hottest part of the flame. The yellow and orange is not as hot as the blue part, but it sheds the most light. The blue part doesn't give off much light. The orange, yellow, red gives off a lot of light. On top of the orange and red and yellow part of the flame comes a gas. And the gas disintegrates into the atmosphere, and finally you don't see it at all. Says the Zohar that these are the three parts of a human being, and they are called nefesh, ruach, and neshama. Nefesh is nefesh kol chai. We say it's a pasuk in Iyuv, and we say it in davening in Mariv. It says nefesh kol chai, veruach kol besar ish. That every chai, every living being, whether it's an animal or whether it's a human being, they share a nefesh. The Meforshim call it nefesh habahami, the nefesh of an animal. In other words, a human being has passions, has drives, has emotions, has desires. That's all part of the animalistic part of man, which is, we define it with the word nefesh. Kol chai, every chai has it. Veruach, kol besar ish. Ruach is only a human being. A animal does not have ruach. As it says in the pasuk, Vayipach ba'ap of nishmas ruach chayim, Hashem breathed into the nostrils of Adam, Harishon. He breathed in him a living spirit, says the Targum Onkelos, leruach memalala. Memalala means talking. A talking spirit. Living spirit and talking spirit is an Adam. An Adam, he talks, and that comes from his ruach. What is his ruach? His seichel. Ruach is another word for human intelligence, which an animal doesn't have. So every creation, every living creation has a nefesh. Those are the nefesh habahami, as we explained. The emotions of the passions, the drives, the desires of a human being. But only an Adam has ruach. The seichel of a person is connected to his speech. So that's why vayipach ba'ap of nishmas chayim, it says the Targum, leruach memalala, the spirit of seichel, which gives man the ability to speak. That goes together. An animal can't speak, an animal doesn't have seichel. And so the blue part of the flame, that is the hot emotions and passions of a human being. The yellow part of the flame is the one that gives light. What gives light? The seichel gives light. Torah. Ayra zu Torah, light is Torah. Das, knowledge, ruach, Torah, all of these words have one common denominator, and that is the intelligence of a human being. So a human being, his yellow part of his flame is on top of the blue part, which means that his seichel is to control his passions and drives, the hot urges of the blue part of a person. On top of that is the yellow part. An animal doesn't have that control of the yellow part. They live with the blue part alone. Whatever they feel like doing, they do. But an Adam is given that power of bechira, of choice, which comes from his seichel to govern his hot animalistic drives. So the yellow part gives off more light, but it's not as hot as the blue part. What is it that is above the blue and the yellow part, that's a gas that goes into the atmosphere? That is the neshama. The neshama, says the Zohar, is stima dechal stima, which means it's a secret. Every one of us knows that we have emotions, and we also have experienced our mind, our intelligence, that we know we have. But no one has ever experienced their neshama. We have a munah that each one of us has a chelik alikam imal. We have a part of a Kaddish Baruch within us. But no one has ever experienced, it's a secret. The neshama, which is in a person, is a secret. And that's why it eventually evaporates into the air and we don't see it, because it's a hidden thing. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, neshama we have to leave separate. That's for Kabbalah. That's a separate thing that, you know, even though there's a trend, I'm in a Camp Sternberg, so there's somebody there from St. Louis. He has a program, he helps to bring in Jews through this way. It's called Kabbalah Made Easy. But actually, this is a way that he gets Jews interested in Kabbalah, which is a hot trend item now, Kabbalah, all over the world. So his way to get the hook to people in is by this program, Kabbalah Made Easy. He told me he used to have to look for people to be makarev. Now he put out this sign, Kabbalah Made Easy. He's swamped with calls. Everybody wants Kabbalah Made Easy. Actually, Kabbalah is not easy. It's very hard. And you're not supposed to learn Kabbalah until you're at least 40 years old. And you're full of, you know, Shas. You know the Talmud Bavli and Yerushalmi. You're familiar with all the regular texts. When you finish with all that, if you finished already, then you can go on to Kabbalah. So we have to leave the Kabbalah, the neshama part of this, we're going to leave on the side. We can't discuss it. It's a secret. What we can focus on are the other two parts, the nefesh and the ruach. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that when a person, Rachmana Litzlan, becomes an onen, when they lose their relative, it's like a storm comes. And last night there was a tremendous storm here in New York City. I was drenched in it going home late at night. That's what happens when a person becomes Rachmana Litzlan an onen, his seichel gets extinguished. The yellow light of the flame gets swamped by a heavy storm, and it extinguishes it. All the person has left is the blue part, meaning that the person can't understand. How is it possible that my father, my mother, my brother, my sister, my daughter, my son, whoever the relative is that passed away, this person who was a part of my life, every minute of my life, we shared, we laughed together, we cried together, that person is not here? It's not logical. It doesn't make sense. The person can't comprehend it. They can feel the loss emotionally. Yes, they have their nefesh. The nefesh habahami they have, the emotions they have. But their seichel is gone. Like the expression, running around like a chicken without a head. They can't understand it. So a person who's living with his blue part of the flame alone, with his nefesh alone, you're usher to serve Hashem. Not just your potter, you're not obligated, but you're in fact prohibited. Hashem doesn't want a person without seichel, who's like an animal without understanding, that person should serve him. No. When did the person get his seichel back? He gets it back when the kfura takes place. Chazal, in their great wisdom, understood that when the internment takes place, then the surviving relative not only feels the loss, but begins to comprehend the loss. They begin to understand that it makes sense, the person's not here anymore. The reality sinks into their intelligence, to their das, to their ruach, and they accept it, and they begin to deal with it. Now that your seichel is back, and the yellow part is back on top of the blue part, now you're not only, you could serve Hashem, now in fact you're mechuyif to serve Hashem. You're obligated to serve Hashem, and you have to do all the dinim of Shiva that is associated with that period in Rachmana Litzlan, when a person has to go through that. So, in other words, Rabbi Soloveitchik beautifully explains that an onen is emotion. An avel is not only emotion, it has the seichel, he or she has the seichel as well. And therefore, they're now mechuyev in mitzvahs. With this, Rabbi Soloveitchik explained something that looks like has no connection with this whole discussion. And that is the chet of David and Bathsheba. If you think about it, you would say, what does David and Bathsheba have to do with a person passing away? Aninus avels, he beautifully explained it. He said the Bible critics have a question, and we don't have to answer Bible critics, but we have to know the answer for ourselves. What's the answer to this very difficult question? What's the question? When David HaMelech sinned with Bathsheba, and Nosson HaNavi came to him and gave him a whole mashal that a poor man had one sheep and the rich man took his one sheep away, and then David said that person should die, and he said he was wrong for what he did. So Nosson HaNavi told him, Ato HaIsh, you are the nimshal of this mashal. I was giving a story up, but I really meant you. You did it to Uriah. You took away his wife, Bathsheba. Now, we're not going to go through the whole story of David and Bathsheba, which it needs great clarification, because David was someone who said on himself, Libi Cholol Bekirbi, which means I have no Yetzirah. So David didn't, it was not, by the way, she was 5 or 6 years old at this time. So it was not an avera of a passion that David HaMelech did with an Eish HaSish, with a married woman, but now is not the time to go into what the chet of David was. In short, he thought that if Uriah dies, it's more important to create Mashiach. He knew that Mashiach is going to come out from his seventh wife. He had 6 wives already. Haloi Zois Bathsheba, that was her name. And Bathsheba was the seventh, and this is your Zivug. His mistake was, he thought he's going to rush into this and get married. That's more important than her commitment to remarry Uriah after he comes back from the battlefield. He wrote a get to his wife, that she's no longer his wife, and he will remarry her, as all the people going out to battle at that time did, that she shouldn't remain an aguna, unable to be married. So he said, I promise when I come back from the battle, I'll remarry you. And David thought creating Mashiach was more important than that personal ben al lechaver commitment. That was David's mistake. Anyway, he didn't think he did an avera. When Nosson told him, Ato HaIsh, you did the avera, So it says that David HaMelech said two words, Chatasi Lashem, I sinned to Hashem. So the Bible critics ask, this is your big tzaddik David HaMelech? That if it's, something happens like that to us, we say, I'm sorry. Next case. You know, are we sorry? That's what it sounds like. Okay, God, I sinned. I mean, you know, let's next. That's all he said. And then, and not only that, it seems to be a contradiction. Because in Tehillim, Perek Nun Aleph, David HaMelech says a fantastic confession, which Rabbeinu Yonah wrote a sefer called Sharei Tshuva, and in the Sharei Tshuva, he outlines all the steps that a person has to take to do a proper tshuva. And if you analyze that perek in Tehillim of David HaMelech, you'll see all the components, Charat al-Avar, regretting your past, Kabbalah al-Haba, accepting you're going to change in the future, Aziva Sached, letting go of the chet. All the components of an unbelievable tshuva are in that perek Nun Aleph. So the question now is, where is the real David HaMelech? Is the real David in Shmuel, where he says two words, Chatasi Lashem, I sinned, or is the real David in Tehillim, where he composes an unbelievable confession? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says they're both correct. One follows the other. When a person is a sinner for most of his life, and one day he wakes up in a nightmare, in a cold sweat, and he screams out, "Oi, oi, oi, Hashem, I've gone so far away from you, I realize my whole life is bankrupt, it's not worth anything." And he wants to come back to Hashem, and he breaks down in tears. That's very good. You know what stage? And here's the connection to the beginning of the shir, Aninus and Avelus. He has now reached Aninus of Chet. In climbing the ladder to tshuva, there are two steps that you have to go through. One is Aninus of Chet, and one is Avelus of Chet. And Onen, we define Onen is emotional. What is Avel? Avel is with your mind. So when the Vilner Gaon says that after the words Chatasi Lashem, there's a space in the Tanakh of nine letters. What happened in that empty space? Asked the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says David HaMelech broke down in tears. He had like emotional breakdown. He broke down in tears. It's not that he said, I sinned, let's go next case like we would do, I'm sorry. And that's it. No. David HaMelech, when it dawned on him, he didn't even realize he had sinned. When Nassan pointed out that you did an aver in your quest to bring Mashiach, where you thought Zrizim Magdim Lemitzes, it's more important to build Mashiach than to care about that Uriah was supposed to remarry. But Olam HaChaver, I've often said that from here we learned that Bein Olam HaChaver is more important than building Mashiach. That's the lesson. That's how sensitive we have to be about something that we've committed ourselves to a fellow man. It's more important than building Mashiach. And David made a mistake. He thought Mashiach's more important. Now that it was pointed out to him, he broke down in tears. His life was shattered. The only words he could get out of his mouth before breaking down was Chatasi Lashem, I sinned. That's very good. But that's not where you stop. If a person stops by the crying, by the emotional, they'll never come to tshuva. They must come to the next step. What is the next step? The next step is Avelus of tshuva. Avelus is not only emotional, it's, as we said before, your mind comes back. David HaMelech had to search himself. Where did I go wrong? How did I come to such a mistake? How do I make sure I'll never do that mistake again? That was Tehillim Perek Nun Aleph. So in Shmuel, Chatasi Lashem, Aninus of Chet, emotional reaction, emotional breakdown, tears. Tehillim, Perek Nun Aleph, that's the intellectual. That's the thinking, how I'll make sure never again to come to such an avera. So, therefore, based on all this, what I wanted to suggest was that in Churban Beis HaMikdash, there are also two steps. And if a person goes, I did this, I think, in 1969, next to the Kosel Maravi, I don't know if it's still there, but in my days, when I visited then, there was an Arab school. And you were allowed to go on top of the roof of the Arab school. Today, probably the Arabs would try to push you off the roof. But in those days, you can go on top of the roof of the Arab school and look down at the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And what do you see in that holy place? You see one of the greatest places of Tumah in the world, the Mosque of Omer. So when a person sees that, they could break down. They can get emotional. Our holy Beis HaMikdash, where the Shekhinah was, where so many miracles happened, where so many millions of Jews came from all over the world. Look, it's Chorev. Look what's instead of our holy Beis HaMikdash. So a person breaks down in tears. That's very good. That's how, today, not many people cry anymore on Tisha B'Av. And we'll speak about that probably in the next year. But the point is, you'll break down in tears. Very good. But you're only up to step one. That's the aninus of destruction of Churban. The second stage is when your seichel comes. Why did the Beis HaMikdash get destroyed? Sinas Chinam. The second Beis HaMikdash was Sinas Chinam, which the Chofetz Chaim explains means speaking Lashon Hara. And not only was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed, but the roots of Sinas Chinam were even in the first Beis HaMikdash. We know the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Gilui Arai, Shvichas Dam, and Avodah Zarah, the three cardinal Averas. That murder and idolatry and forbidden marriages. But part of it was also the roots for the Sinas Chinam that would eventually destroy the second Beis HaMikdash. So the person not only cries about the Churban, but they think into the causes of the Churban, and they say, I have to change this. I have to do something about it. So that's being a misabel. That's not only feeling bad and crying, but it's thinking what can... It says, Kol dor shalai nivne Beis HaMikdash b'yamav ki'ilu nechrav b'yamav. Every generation that the Beis HaMikdash wasn't rebuilt in its time, it's as if it was destroyed in its time. So therefore, what am I doing to rebuild it? If I stop speaking Lashon Hara, if I have Avas Chinam, like the OU had a program a few Tisha B'Avs ago, good for nothing. If you do good for nothing, you do Avas Chinam, you love someone and you do good to them, not because you're going to get something out of it, but for no reason for you personally, the opposite. Your whole agenda is to help the other person. So if we would all do that, that is Avelis. That's thinking into the Churban, not just feeling bad emotionally, but thinking. And that's called Misabel. And if so, our beginning questions of the Shir are now answered. There are two obligations, it says in Shulchan Aruch. Roy l'chol yorishimayim, it's proper for every God-fearing Jew, litzar velidag al churban beis hamikdash. To have litzar means to have distress. That's an emotional reaction, crying, tears. That's one thing. The second thing you have to do, you can't stop at tears. The second thing you have to do is lidag, to worry. How does a person worry? With their mind. You're worrying about the worrying. I hope I could do something. Why did it happen? I hope I could change it. I hope. That's worrying with your mind. One is an emotional reaction. One is with your mind. And that's why Chazal say, if you want to be from those people who... we'll see the Simcha of Yerushalayim, then Kol Hamis Abel al Yerushalayim. We ask the question, why doesn't it say Kol HaBocha, whoever cry? The answer according to this is crying is not enough. You have to come to the next level of thinking about it. And thinking will lead you, crying will not, crying will give you the incentive to do tshuva. But you have to know why you're doing tshuva, what you're doing tshuva for. That's thinking. When you think into it, that can lead you to a proper tshuva. That's why Chazal say, Kol Amis Abel al Yerushalayim. Whoever has Avelus for Yerushalayim and is thinking about it, that person will be zocheh to see the simcha. I'm going to end the shir posing two questions, which Be'ezras Hashem, in the next year, I hope next Wednesday, same time, we will answer those two questions. The two questions are, question one, there's a pasuk in Eicha which says, Vayorev bevas Yehuda taniyah vaniyah. Hashem increased for the daughter of Yehuda taniyah vaniyah. What do these strange words mean? So the Targum Yonison says, Taniya vaniya, avelusa ve'aninusa. So this thought that I thought of in, I think in Camp Anna Heller or Camp Spada was called 35 years ago, I found that it wasn't my own idea, but it's actually the Targum. In other words, the Targum says concerning the Churban Beis Hamikdash, there is Avelusa Vaninisa. Here are the two components that we spoke about, Aninus and Avelus, and they are associated with the Churban Beis Hamikdash. So the only question is, what should come first, Aninus or Avelus? What's always, when a person is nifter, what comes first? Aninus, then Avelus. Aninus, you're also to do mitzvahs. Avelus, you're chayv to do mitzvahs. Aninus is right after the death took place. So what should have the Targum said? Aninusa ve'avelusa. And the Targum turns it around. Avelusa, that is, why is Avelus put before Aninus when always Aninus is put for Avelus? Question number one.
It's Taniyav, Aniyav.
Yeah.
So it's the same
shoresh,
basically, right?
Okay, I don't know about the shoresh. I don't know, but still, it doesn't answer. It does not. Yeah. The second question is kolamis. It says kolamis abel yishlam zocha veroe b'simchasa. What should it have said? Zocha, you're going to be zocha when? Now or in the future? In the future. So the proper dictum should be kolamis abel yishlam. Yizke v'yira b'simchasa. If you mourn now, you'll be one of those who will see in the future that the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt. And yet the Chazal say in Lashon Hove, you'll see now. Kol Masav Yishlam zocha v'roe. You will merit to see Hove now, not in the future. It should be in the future when the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt. You'll be one of those to see it. Why does it put it in the present tense? These two questions, Mircham, we hope to address in the next year.